Here they come. Right now, they're gathering from hospitals all across America for Talk 10 Tuesday. They know there's important news and information just ahead. Don't miss out. Come in, sit down, and log on. It's Talk 10 Tuesday with Chuck Buck and co-host Dr. Erica Reamer. Here now is the publisher of ICD-10 Monitor, Chuck Buck.
Thank you, Clark Anthony. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 407th live edition of Talk 10 Tuesday, and brought to you today by ICD University. And joining me this morning as my co-host is Dr. Erica Reamer. Dr. Reamer is the founder and the president of Erica Reamer, MD, Incorporated. Good morning, Erica. You have been missed.
Thank you, Chuck. Good morning, everybody.
Our lead story this morning is about the Coordination and Maintenance Committee meeting. It's taking place at this very hour at CMS headquarters in Baltimore.
Well, at least we think it's at CMS headquarters, but it could be any place today.
That's right. As a result of the coronavirus, the CNM meeting is being conducted as a virtual meeting. CMS doesn't want people exposed to the virus, which has now, of course, been declared a national emergency by President Trump.
And the coronavirus is the subject for the Talk 10 Tuesday Coding Report with Lori Johnson.
And Lori is also going to be reporting on the CNM meeting that's taking place right now. She'll be returning to the broadcast in just a few minutes.
And also on today's broadcast is Dr. H. Stephen Moffick, who has part two in his exclusive report on the impact of climate change on mental health.
And you have a talkback segment today. What are you going to be reporting?
I am also going to give you my insight on COVID-19.
Very good. We have much news to report, and we begin with Tim Powell, who's at the Talk 10 Tuesday news desk.
The Talk 10 Tuesday News Desk is sponsored by ICD University Bookstore, reminding you that Dr. Eric Reamer's CDI learning modules for providers are now available. Use the ICD-10 Monitor Resources tab at the top of the web room for more information.
Here now is Tim Powell.
Thanks, Chuck. And statistical analysis is a funny thing. It turns out you don't need a lot of data to reach a conclusion. At the start of the play, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. The two main characters are flipping a coin. The coin has come up 92 times in a row as heads. The action starts when the coin finally comes up as tails. Mathematically, if you flip a coin, the chances that it will be heads or tails is 50%. If you flip the coin again, though, the odds that it will be heads a second time drops to only 25%. Why is this important? Well, in reaching decisions about a characteristic in a group like exposure to COVID-19, at some point, testing a limited number of random people, we can reach conclusions with a certain amount of probability. In statistics, we call these confidence levels. These levels are most often given as 95% or 99%. Now, here's the interesting part. Whether our sample size is the 1 million people in a particular city or the 365 million people living in the United States, the sample size to determine a characteristic does not change a lot. Remember my coin example? Based on statistics, and assuming that people have similar characteristics, if I sample 16,369 people in a group of 1 million people, I can determine with a 99% probability the percentage of people with COVID-19. If I increase the sample size to 365 million people for the entire United States, the sample size needs to only increase to 16,640. Instead of sampling people that are sick and may have COVID-19, if we test random samples, both nationally and locally, we can make better decisions and cut through the fear. And with that, back to you, Chuck.
Thanks, Tim, very much. That was Tim Powell. Tim is a compliance expert and an ICD-10 Monitor National Correspondent. It's St. Patrick's Day. It's Tuesday, March 17th, and you're listening to the 407th live edition of Talk 10 Tuesday. Stand by.
Imagine the convenience of having access to one of the nation's most respected sources of interventional and diagnostic radiology services. Imagine no more registering for each resource, ebooks, coding charts, e-newsletters, blogs, plus live and on-demand webcasts. No hassles, no searches. Now you can have access with an all-access pass from MedLearn Publishing. MedLearn is America's most trusted leader in coding, billing, and compliance for interventional and diagnostic radiology services. Tap into this expertise with an all-access pass, now available with one low annual investment. The all-access pass opens a new window of convenience, giving you complete access to the MedLearn portfolio of interventional and diagnostic radiology resources. Subscribe today for your all-access pass. Get top-rated radiology, interventional radiology, coding, and compliance education. Now available online at shop.medlearn.com.
Here now with the Talk to End Tuesday Coding Report is Lori Johnson.
Good morning, Chuck, and good morning, Erica, and hello and happy St. Patrick's Day to our listeners. It will be a very quiet celebration as we practice social distancing. Many cities have shut down dine-in restaurants and non-essential businesses. The American Medical Association has published a new CPT code effective immediately for COVID-19 testing, and that's testing that's done 3/13/20 and later. The code is 87635 with description of infectious agent detection by nucleic acid, DNA or RNA, severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus 2, and in parentheses SARS-CoV-2, amplified probe technique. This code should be added to your charge master so that you can capture the testing for COVID-19. The pricing has not been determined, but the MAC should be able to guide you for a pricing option. You will need to contact payers to determine if they want the HCPCS code, which we've talked about before, or the CPT code on the claim. The Coordination and Maintenance Committee meeting has been converted to a virtual-only meeting due to the coronavirus. I have provided information under the panelist resources so that you can join the meeting after Talk 10 Tuesday. The meeting began at 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time and will begin at 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time tomorrow. Procedures are the topic for today, and the agenda is pretty large. You will hear clinical information and coding options for each proposal. There are two ways to join the meeting, via WebEx or via conference call. You can only speak to the proposals if you join via WebEx. All written comments are due by April 17, 2020. Emails can be sent to ICD procedure code request at cms.hhs.gov for procedures. At the beginning of the meeting, they announced that COVID-19 code would be U07.1, that is effective 10/1/2020, and EVALI, which will be coded as U07.0, and that is effective 4/1/20. So with that, Erica, back to you.
Thank you, Lori. That was Lori Johnson. Lori is a senior healthcare consultant for Revenue Cycle Solutions, LLC. Chuck?
Thank you both. And a programming note, Lori Johnson is moderating today's virtual CNM meeting, and she'll be back on the broadcast to report on the meeting later. Returning to Talk to Tuesday this morning is the president of the International Federation of Health Information Associations, Lorraine Fernand. And this morning she continues her reporting on patient privacy from a global perspective. And good morning, Lorraine.
Thank you, Chuck, and thanks for the invitation to return. So today's COVID-19 pandemic, which we're all living with, clearly illustrates the global society we live in, as well as the global nature of healthcare. While public health prevails, obviously, in today's world, that does not mean we forsake managing the privacy of personally identifiable health information. In November of last year, a mere 4 months ago, seems like ages, doesn't it? IFHMA released our newest white paper, Privacy of Health Information, an IFHMA Global Perspective. I had the pleasure of being the board liaison and co-author for this paper, which can be located on the IFHMA.org website. The paper addresses privacy and trust, global privacy trends, privacy management programs, and privacy awareness training, as well as privacy in developing nations and many other topics. We include case studies from around the world, including Australia, the European Union, India, Qatar, Republic of Korea, and of course, the United States. Privacy principles and regulations aren't a concept just from the last one or two decades. Privacy, in fact, the principles or the frameworks that support privacy have been governing health and other sensitive data. Obviously, when it started, it was hard copy. Today, it's predominantly digital. And these standards have been around since the 1970s with the Caldecott Principles of the United Kingdom, and the Principles of Fair Information Practice, the FIPS as they're commonly known as, which the United States and the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, developed. These decades-old principles continue to serve privacy practices around the world. It's not out with the old and in with the new. They are used. More recently, the Global Data Protection Regulation, known as GDPR, of the European Union, has taken the privacy of information to the next level. The GDPR was enacted by the European Union to cover its 28 member nations and 510 million citizens, and I underscore citizens, because as the GDPR went into effect, it applies to data created about an EU citizen. Thus, almost any organization, as you manage your privacy, should consider your privacy regulations and policies in light of the GDPR, because GDPR citizens, EU citizens, live everywhere in the world, as we know. So here's a fun fact related to that. Did you know that the NHS has banned buying fax machines and intends to phase out their use by March 31st of 2020, just 2 weeks away, as we all know? So it's yet to be seen whether, in fact, that takes place firmly on March 31st. So I'll wrap my preview for all of our listeners here with some recommendations that IFHMA has as you read our paper and decide how to apply privacy to your organization. Number one, get involved as privacy and data protection regulations are developed. Two, assess what the proposed regulations may mean to your organization and communicate your concerns and insight to leadership and regulatory bodies. It's be proactive, not reactive, we hope. Think about the required changes to your systems and policies and processes and technologies as the regulations evolve and are finalized. And fourth, train your healthcare teams, administrators, patients, and clients. Many more recommendations in the white paper. So please go to IFHMA.org and register to receive this important white paper. Consider joining our organization to hear the latest in global health information practices. And of course, be well to all of our listeners. I thank you much, Chuck and Erica. Back to you, Erica.
Thank you, Lorraine. That was President of the International Federation of Health Information Associations, Lorraine Fernand.
Our Tuesday focus this morning is about the impact of rising global temperatures on mental health. This morning, Dr. H. David Moffitt reports on ecological grief and climate-related. For you here now is Dr. Moffitt.
Morning, Chuck. And for our last climate-related article and talk, we may recall that we focused on both nostalgia and solastalgia. Today, we will concentrate on conditions that also connect with loss and sadness. However, before doing so, we must pause for the terrible irony of our time and that all these climate-related conditions are influenced, at least temporarily, by another global challenge, our coronavirus pandemic. The homesickness, while home of solastalgia, is being turned on its head when we have to stay at home and we don't want to, even if we had mainly stayed at home before, if that makes sense. That may cause being sick of being home. The loss and sadness of what we are losing in our everyday life is part and parcel of the pandemic. Nevertheless, we should not put aside climate concerns, even though they are short-term, because corrective action is indeed time-sensitive. In fact, the paradox is that for now, we will be reducing our carbon global footprint by flying less, driving less, and the online interacting more. So back to ecological grief, which is rising across the world. It is a term that could be defined as, quote, grief felt in relation to experienced or anticipated ecological losses, end of quote. It's no wonder that we use the term Mother Earth to psychologically depict how our environment can nurture us. To add insult to these injuries and losses, certain groups are even more vulnerable. The poor suffer the worst after hurricanes. The elderly, as with coronavirus, are at particular risk, here of heat-related illness or death. Racism may be evident in the disproportionate exposure to toxic waste sites or water containing lead, as in Flint, Michigan. Native Americans may have inherited transmitted ecological grief because they have experienced the loss of home and habitat for generations as they were expelled from their more nurturing lands to reservations. Then there are the climate scientists themselves, who struggle with grieving as they are studying the climate changes. Here's the words of one of them, quote, "There's a power and an honor to grief because it means that we have loved something and we've had a connection to a place or to the species of the planet. More and more people are coming forward to share their pain because ecological grief is so much now a part of the public narrative." Inuit leader Sheila Watt Clovier led a really amazing movement across Canada, bringing a lawsuit against the government for, quote, "the right to be cold," end of quote. While some people can develop full-blown ICD clinical depression after climate-related losses, more common is a kind of existential climate-related despair. Here are some of the differences. In despair, the emotion is emptiness. In depression, it's an intense sadness. In despair, there is responsiveness to positive events. In depression, unhappiness is persistent. In despair, though content is often on external climate-related problems, in depression, thought is on personal guilt and failure. In despair, self-esteem is preserved, whereas in depression, there is a feeling of worthlessness. As painful as both ecological and grief and despair may be, they represent appropriate concern for the environment. And rather than denial or apathy, and after some appropriate mourning, they can lead to the insight and action that most everyone should have. Back to you, Erica.
Thank you, Steve. That was H. Stephen Moffick. Dr. Moffick is a foremost American psychiatrist, and we appreciate his insight. Chuck?
Indeed we do, Erica. Thanks very much, and thank you, Dr. Moffick. Dr. Moffick is writing an exclusive series on the topic of climate change and its impact on mental health for ICD-10 Monitor, and you can read Dr. Moffick's report on ecological grief and climate-related dysphoria in today's ICD-10 Monitor News. Our lead story this morning is about the Coordination and Maintenance Committee meeting that's now underway at CMS headquarters in Baltimore. Now, what's unusual about the meeting taking place today and, of course, tomorrow is being conducted as a virtual event. So, with an update on the new codes that are being proposed at the CNM meeting here now, once again, is Lori Johnson. Lori, has there been a code proposed for the coronavirus?
There has. They have announced that the coronavirus code will be U07.1. And as I mentioned earlier, the EVALI code has been adopted as well as U07.0, which is effective April 1st, 2020, and that's not an April Fool's prank. The coronavirus code is not valid until 10-1-2020. So they have a little time to wait. So that's why we have to use that temporary guidance until October 1st. But today, the first topic that was presented was intramedullary sustained compression joint fusion, which has not applied for a new technology code. The manufacturer is MedShape. The device adds sustained compression of the joint, which is different than any other implant. And that's why they want to be able to follow these implants. And they have done testing that shows that they have a better clinical outcome, but they're not able to separate them with the coded data. So that's why they want to create some new codes for that device. The second topic is administration of Terlivaz, which is a medication to treat hepatorenal syndrome type 1. It's an investigational new drug. A new technology application has been made and is for fiscal year 21, so for October 1st. The third topic that's been covered is the implantation of the alpha pump syndrome for peritoneal ascites drainage through urinary bladder evacuation. And the fourth topic that I've seen is the syndromic infectious disease testing for pneumonia, and a new new technology application has been submitted for fiscal year 21 on that technology as well. This technology allows for better detection of pneumonia, and the information they've provided is 66.7% they're able to detect pneumonia compared to 41.7% by the usual methods now. So, and that test is run on bronchial alveolar lavage specimens. So it's a laboratory test that's run. So that's what I've been able to listen so far. They began at 9 o'clock. There have been a few hiccups with doing this meeting virtually as they're trying to pass back and forth via WebEx. But again, I would encourage you to use the resources under the panelist resources to be able to listen to the WebEx or be able to dial in. Remember, if you want to make any comments, that you have to do that through WebEx. And as always, they'll allow written comments as well. And it's also, since the a lot of the meetings have been canceled, I know that my professional, the state HIM meeting, has been postponed from April to August. And if you're in need of getting CE credits, AHIMA and AAPC will give you free CE credits if you listen to this meeting. So it's another good option. So with that, back to you, Erica.
Actually, I've been thinking a lot that my modules would be excellent CME activity for physicians who have to stay home for 14 days because they're being quarantined. They may as well learn how to document. Thank you, Lori. That was Lori Johnson. Lori is Senior Healthcare Consultant at Revenue Cycle Solutions, LLC. Chuck?
Coming up next, our very popular segment. It's called Talk Back, and it features Dr. Erica Reamer. This is Talked In Tuesday. Stand by.
The American Medical Association has a new coding book certain to be a bestseller. It's E&M Office Visit Compendium 2021, Resources for Understanding CPT Coding for Office and Outpatient Visits. This new book provides curated content to help you understand the E&M changes coming in 2021 while providing practical tools to help you adapt and prepare. Get the resources you need for coding based on time or medical decision-making and insight as to which method is appropriate to which visit scenarios. All that and more in this new must-have book from the American Medical Association. And it's available online now at the AMA Bookstore. Order yours today. E&M Office Visit Compendium 2021, Resources for Understanding CPT Coding for Office and Outpatient Visits.
Now's the time for a very popular segment here at Talked In Tuesday, and it's called Talk Back, and it features our own Dr. Erica Reamer. And once again, good morning, Dr. Reamer.
Chuck, guests, and listeners, these are very challenging and scary times for us, especially if we work in healthcare. I was skeptical of social distancing at first, thinking it was just going to prolong the inevitable, but I was wrong. After our broadcast, I am going to recommend everyone take a look at the piece that the Washington Post is allowing us to access for free. Emily has posted it on the Resources tab. Everyone should be practicing social distancing to the best of your ability. Social distancing means limiting your physical contact with other individuals with the intent to slow down the transmission of the virus. Hopefully, this will prevent the healthcare system from getting overwhelmed, enabling everyone who needs medical care to receive it. People need to take this seriously. I myself canceled my nail salon appointment, asked my cleaning service to not come, and one by one, my spring speaking engagements are being canceled. I basically venture out only to grocery shop. When I go out to buy essentials, I do so as expeditiously and hygienically as possible. I bring my own wipes for the cart. I am not only doing this to try to prevent me from becoming infected, but since my husband is a radiologist and may bring home the coronavirus, I am trying to prevent exposing other people to me. Since many infections are mild or subclinical, we may be unwitting vectors. In fact, we got a question already asking if someone is without symptoms of the virus but is a carrier of the virus, how long will they be a carrier of the virus? And I'll answer it right now. I don't think we have all the data that we need yet. So remember, the testing has not been widely available in the United States up until very recently, and even now it's still revving up. So the question is, what is the denominator? And we don't know. So people who are sick and are presenting for care, we are getting a handle on how many of them there are, but the people who are asymptomatic or mildly clinically involved, we don't really know how many of them there are. And so we really don't know how long that they're going to be. We don't know when they're going to be exposing other people, and we don't know how long it's going to last. The average incubation period seems to be 5 days, but they have a span of 3 to 13 days, but we don't know how they're going to be spreading it if they're asymptomatic. So anyway, back to my little spiel here. So many of you normally work remotely, and some of you may be doing so temporarily in response to the pandemic, and I have some advice for you. If you get sick, don't panic. Just having aches and pains and a sniffly nose and fever is not a reason to go to the emergency department to get tested. Seek medical help if you are having trouble breathing. If you have underlying medical conditions or are older than 60 and get sick, contact your healthcare provider for advice. Many are offering virtual visits. If you really think you have COVID-19, call your doctor's office first to allow them to advise you what to do. They may not want you to come in to expose their personnel or patients and may have somewhere else that they think you should be going to be assessed. Cover your mouth and nose when you sneeze and cough. Wash your hands for 20 seconds and dry them, or use hand sanitizer with more than 60% alcohol after doing so. If you're out, clean off the grocery cart with a wipe and avoid touching your face until you have washed your hands thoroughly. Clean any keyboards you share. Routinely clean all high-touch surfaces, such as counters, doorknobs, handrails, grab bars, and phones. Don't let other people handle your cell phones, and don't set them down if you are out. Apple now says you can use disinfectant wipes or spray a microfiber cloth and wipe off a powered-down, unplugged phone. Masks are not part of the solution. Most people don't have access to the right kind of mask and don't wear them properly. Don't give yourself a false sense of security. Next week, I'm going to have some advice on how to maintain our general health and sanity while cooped up at home for 2 months. Till then, everybody, stay well.
Thanks, Erica, very much for that very helpful advice. We've asked our panel to stick around to answer some questions that have been coming in. We've got a lot of questions. We're going to try to answer them in the remaining time that we have. Erica, let's take a look at some of the questions. Most of them are directed to Lori.
Yes, Lori. Someone was asking if you could repeat what the U07.1 and U07.0 codes are being used to describe.
Okay. U07.1 is for COVID-19. That is effective 10-1-2020. And U07.0 is for EVALI, which is the vaping disorder, and it's effective 4-1-2020.
Have they told us what the inclusion terms that they're using for it? Because I had seen a while back, if you remember, I had seen on one of the emergency medicine online articles, they were using VAPI, V-A-P-I, for their referring to EVALI. Are they including that one as well?
I haven't looked in the coordination and maintenance documents, so that might be a good place to start.
Okay. Back to you, Chuck.
All right, everybody. Thanks very much. That's going to be a wrap for our 407th live edition Tucked In Tuesday. And I want to thank our panelists today, Lorraine Fernand, Lori Johnson, whom we just heard, Tim Powell, Dr. H. Stephen Moffitt, and, of course, our co-host, welcome back, Dr. Erica Reamer. And remember, you can listen to all the Talk Ten Tuesday podcast anytime, anywhere, on any device. It's absolutely free. Until next Tuesday, I'm Chuck Buck, reporting for ICD-10 Monitor at Talk Ten Tuesday. Thank you so very much for being with us.
Talk Ten Tuesday is a production of ICD-10 Monitor.